Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Analysing Everton with me, David Hughes, and, of course, Josh Williams. Today's episode is a Q&A special. It's something that we did on the Analysing Anfield podcast, and there was a couple of Blues who reached out who I think may listen to both, which seems quite bizarre, but obviously the football fans so must enjoy doing so, and they asked for it to be an Everton version. Well, this is it, and obviously we put the questions out on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram as well, and we've got quite a few to get through today. But before doing so, I'll go over to my co-host Josh and ask Josh, how are you?
Good, mate. This is our first, I think, first Q&A ever, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember doing one with Everton. Obviously, we've done a couple with Liverpool, haven't we? But it's a new one with Everton, and should be good, hopefully. You know, there's some good questions in there. I mean, there's a couple that we had to take out, but it's more so that they just weren't necessarily stuff that we cover on this podcast, which is quite normal, isn't it, Josh? Like, that happens sometimes on the Analyze Anfield ones as well, where it's just better that we don't kind of speak about things that you wouldn't consider our speciality, I guess.
Yeah, it tends to be financial sort of stuff, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Get asked about finances and things, and that's a complete different level of expertise, really.
Yeah, there's one or two at stadium as well. Obviously, I know as much as anybody who's listening. You know, I'm just looking for updates through the likes of the Echo and things. So, yeah, I can't add much insight onto that. But we'll get straight into it. And one of the first questions we have come in is two, actually, from at a bag full of toffee, who I actually speak to a little bit now on Twitter. No, he seems quite a nice, cool person. So they've said, has the Rodriguez transfer been a success? For me, personally, it's a no. I can't really say with his injury record and games that he's missed, that he's added enough to the team. Although I am eternally grateful for the pass to Richarlison and for the goal against Liverpool at Anfield last month. Josh, I think it's best maybe you start us off on that one.
It's in the second question, actually. We've never, even in the Analysed Anfield questions, we've never really had one like that. But I think for me, it depends what he was bought for, I suppose. You know, what was the idea with this player? What did you get him in for? And, you know, how far off what he's contributed is what you expected. But I think did he arrive on a free?
Yeah, technically come out. We assumed initially it was maybe around 20 million, but news broke a little bit later, a few months down the line, and it was actually a free transfer.
And it's a relatively short contract, isn't it? Like 2 years, maybe?
Correct, yeah, with an option of a third.
Yeah, well, I mean, without knowing what wages he's on, but even if he's on a daft wage, I suppose, you know, you've got the player for free. I wouldn't say it's been a failure. A success might be a bit of a push, but I wouldn't say it's been a failure either. I think specifically in terms of the points that this player has won so far, almost on his own. I mean, you know, think of the games that so far this season, specifically early on, without James playing, would Everton have picked up 3 points or even a point in certain games? And I think, you know, that for me is a key way of judging a player's success on the field in terms of what he does to your goal difference, what he does to your ability to win points. And I think he's won more than you'd probably expect in the first year of a player who's just arrived for free. And, you know, if he struggles moving forward even more than he has already done in terms of getting on the field, you know, you've only got him for 2 years, and then you can reassess then. So I'm not sure about success, but certainly not a failure for me. I'm not sure about you, Dave.
Yeah, like, I'm definitely more towards success than failure, without doubt, in fact. I can understand totally what he's saying about the comments regarding fitness, because he has missed a fair few games. I actually got a little bit of stick for pointing that out at the start of the year, but, you know, it's the truth. I haven't got to hand on when he's missed, but he does miss a lot of matches. But this is really what I expected based on his injury record when he first came in. And I think it's one of the reasons Everton were able to sign him, because I think a fully fit and available James Rodriguez week in, week out plays at a much higher level, because I do think he's that good, in my opinion anyway. So I think one of the reasons Everton were able to land him was because he's not going to be that player who's going to be available every week. But I mean, if you have a look at his actual input to the side this season, you know, across all competitions, 5 goals, 7 assists. And I'm pretty sure last time I checked, he ranks top in terms of shot creating actions per 90 in the Premier League. So, you know, you could make a case that in many ways he's Everton's most creative player. And that influence of, you know, directly contributing to 12 goals, you've injected that into the side this season with not a lot of time on the pitch in comparison to other players, at least anyway. So I actually think he's been a really, you know what, the more I think about it, I actually think he has been a pretty successful signing. You know, if you consider that, bear in mind he hasn't been available week in, week out, he still contributed directly to 12 goals, either 5 he scored himself or 7 assists. I think that's a pretty good return, and exactly what Everton were after last summer, you know, someone who adds to the goal difference.
Yeah, and that, you know, that doesn't consider the odd little pre-assist that he might have posted. You know, I'm thinking specifically early on again, but the switches of play that he was offering towards the likes of Lucas Digne and Richarlison, those switches of play didn't always directly result in a goal, but they might have resulted in a cross, and then that cross delivered the goal. So I've got those numbers to hand, but specifically in terms of the threat that he's offered in certain games without actually registering a goal involvement, His threat has always been really high, and he's just one of those who just makes differences with the actions that he makes on the ball. He just does stuff that matters.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he has got, I'd say, at least maybe 4 of those second assists, you know, the pass before the pass, and they split opinions, but I think they're worth measuring myself. I think there's definitely value behind them. Josh, I don't know if you want to maybe he's actually asked the second question. I don't know if you maybe want to run through it.
Well, I can see that he's praised one of your pieces, Dave. So I'll let you read, Ray.
Yeah, that, any excuse for me to do that, to be honest. No, yeah. As I said, it's someone I've spoken to a little bit, actually. So every now and again, if I pull a piece out, he'll reach out, which is not always nice. But yeah, I'd pull a piece out earlier in the week in the Echo, just talking about, you know, a couple of targets Everton could potentially pursue. I talk about the kind of right wing back, right wing area. He said that, you know, Baku might be a really good option for Everton, just because obviously he's a player who can play at right back, who can play right wing, contributes a lot in terms of, you know, goals, assists, and just having a really good campaign. But that kind of opened the door for him to put a few of his own suggestions forward. And he asked what were our thoughts on. I'm pretty sure the pronunciation is Celik, even though he's Turkish. Is it Leon, I think? Lille, yeah. Who he said he really rated. Now, Josh, just before, like, briefly speak about him, was he on your radar at all?
Yeah, he's a player I'm aware of. I think in the past, when I've been asked to do the odd little piece on, you know, recommending a player for a certain club, I think he's come up a few times for me. I think specifically in relation to Spurs, maybe. I recall recommending him as a Spurs suggestion when they were in need of a fullback.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know too much about him, but no. I am certainly aware of him, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm similar boat. So I saw some of them against Ajax in the Europa League. One thing I will say, though, Josh, I had a quick look after it was recommended, and the underlying numbers didn't blow me away. Fairly average in terms of like success rate in duels, both on the floor and in the air, and hasn't created a ton in terms, you know, like goals and assists. I think there was only maybe the one goal and two assists, something like that. Pretty sure he's about, how old is he now? Yeah, he's 24, so still not a bad age, but I think there's better candidates out there. And you know, Riddlebacher, who I talked about, I think he is one. For those who don't know, or maybe missed a piece, obviously he plays for Wolfsburg. He's only 22, and he originally started out as a central midfielder, but he got moved by Mainz to almost like right back. And now he's floating, and then he performed so well there last season that Wolfsburg ended up making a move in the summer, brought him in. He's performing really well again. He fluctuates between right back and right wing, which I think is good for Everton at the moment, because they're kind of weak in both of those positions. There's only Rodriguez, who's that kind of natural, who's the player who plays on the right wing, but he's not a natural right winger, is he, Rodriguez? He's more of like a, you know, a floating number 10 type. So I think if you're still going to have someone like Coleman in the squad, then having a player who can play right back, but then maybe go right wing if you need more of a penetrative threat from that position, and bringing Coleman in right back could work, you know, could just kill two birds with one stone. And then obviously he's got that experience as a central midfielder as well, which is, again, appealing. So yeah, and another player that was mentioned, Josh, Anthony Ajax, you know, the right winger. Another one on your radar, or?
Yeah, Liverpool faced Ajax twice this season. You know what? I actually can't remember if he played both games. But he's a player that I'm aware of in terms of being a little bit the next in line when it comes to Ajax. Obviously, they've sold a few of the forwards of late. Ziyech went to Chelsea and stuff. So he's kind of just another good Ajax pickup by the looks of it. Looks like a good talent. Not entirely sure on his age. I'll double check that now, but I'm pretty sure he's young.
Yeah, he's either 20 or 21. Yeah, 21 just turned February.
21, yeah. Yeah, but I do think Everton should be in the market for some sort of forward this summer. Even if it's just, you know, right wing, left wing, whatever, just some sort of forward who's going to deliver output and going to help out Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison at the business end of the pitch. And I think he's on his way. I think maybe Everton can target someone who's a bit more established and a bit more able to deliver in the short term while also having that long-term potential. I think Anthony is clearly a long-term star, but in terms of the short-term aspects of it, he might be one that you've got to be a bit patient with. And I think in the Premier League especially, there's kind of always that demand to immediately offer something regardless of your long-term potential.
Yeah, really good point. And I think that's worth keeping in mind when talking about another suggestion, which was Alexander Barr, who's a, you know, right back for Slavia Prague. Another one who I'd heard about, I know he made a move, I think it was either midway through this season or the last, and he plays for the Danish national team, but he's not someone I know a lot about, I'll be honest. He seems like maybe if he's only just moved to Slavia, it makes me think that perhaps he's not quite there yet, and probably needs a little bit longer to mature. But I don't know if you've got more insight on him, Josh.
No, not particularly. The Slavia Prague players I was previously aware of, obviously I don't watch very much, so the Slavia Prague players I was aware of was the likes of the lads who went to West Ham, you know, Soufal and Souček. So I think that's the right Prague, isn't it?
Yeah,
two Prague, and you get confused with them a little bit, but yeah, not too aware of them, to be honest, Dave.
Yeah, same. So just on that back four, Toffee, you seem to be doing the one delivering the names here that potentially catching me and Josh out. But we could pretend that we'd seen them, but the reality is you need to, you know, you don't want to be putting your neck on the line saying the player's good when you haven't watched him enough. And he's definitely under that bracket. One final play he did highlight before we move on. I always murder this pronunciation. Stuttgart's Wam Mange Tuka. Would you say that's close, Josh?
To be honest, I thought I was expecting worse.
Yeah, well, I've delivered worse. You know, you do it with me every week, and you know what I'm like. But yeah, no. Obviously, Stuttgart plays out on the right. Straight, I can't believe it that he scored 13 goals from right wing back this season, which makes me wonder how beneficial the system is at Stuttgart for them. Because for his age, I'm pretty sure there was only across Europe, top five leagues, I think there was only Haaland and, ironically, Moise Keane, who'd scored more than him for something like 21 and under, which is pretty phenomenal, isn't it? But he's got a lot to like. He's really good engine, good pace, good technical skill, and he's a player that looks like he's going to go quite far. Maybe it could be a move to the Premier League, but I think I saw earlier this week that he just signed a new deal with Stuttgart, so that could be a bit of a stumbling block, couldn't it?
Yeah, there's a few insistent players at Stuttgart, actually. There's a lad called Nicolas Gonzalez. He's 22 years old. He's a forward playing on the left, I think. And he's only young as well, so he's scoring a few goals and things, so he's one to keep an eye on. But I think in terms of Waman Gutierrez, he suffered a big injury, you know. He's currently out injured with a cruciate.
Yeah, well, I should have flagged that as well. And to be fair to the person who brought the question in, they did say he's recently just suffered the ACL.
Yeah, that's in terms of a summer transfer, that's obviously going to be a problem. In fact, I'd go as far as saying there's no chance you're getting him this summer. There's no chance he's on anyone's list because, even when a player's due to come back in October, it's still too much of a big injury to immediately dedicate a transfer fee to, as he's coming back or just after he's came back. You almost want to get another season out of him after this injury, see if it's affected him, see if he suffers reoccurring problems. But as a talent, obviously he's only 21 years old, having a good season and stuff. So yeah, he's one to keep an eye on, definitely.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, fingers crossed for them when he does come back. But we'll move on anyway because, we've still got a fair few questions to get through. So go ahead, Josh.
So this is from Tom Newton, 89. And he says, if Everton were to sign a right-back, centre mid and winger, how would you guys rate the following players as potential targets? So for right-back, we have to rank Max Ahrens, Tyreek Lamptey and I think it's Leo Dubois. In centre mid, we have to rate Dennis Zakaria, Babacar Soumaré, and Yves Bissouma. And then winger, we have to rate, I assume that's Leon Bailey, Moussa Diaby, and I assume that's Ismaïla Sarr. So, Dave, I'll let you start. We'll go with the right backs first, eh?
Yeah, okay then. Tough one, but I'd
really tough one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably go with, and you could ask me maybe on a different day, and I'd go a different way. But I think I'm going to go with in this order. Here's the issue I have, Jeff. Right, I like Lamptey, and I think he's done really well. But I just still have this problem of his, the thing that everyone's always talking about, his size a little bit and things. But I'm going to go Lamptey, Ahrens, Dubois, just because I think the other two potentially have a higher ceiling.
Okay. I think for me, Dubois is obviously the player I've watched the least because he's playing outside of England. But having said that, looking at his numbers are actually the most appealing. His numbers look really good across the board. I'm pretty sure as well he's 24, so he's probably more primed to deliver right now. So, I mean, that's a bit of a naive take, I suppose, purely based on his age. I mean, I'm not really sure, but given his age, he's closer to what is usually a player's prime. But his numbers look really good. In terms of the three, though, I think Lamptey is the most appealing for me. If I could have a right back in my team, I'd probably take Lamptey the most. I just think he's such a threat, despite the fact he's clearly, a right back, right wing back, whatever you want to call it. The threat that he offers from defence, it is really valuable if you've got threatening players all over the pitch. Like, if you think of some players who get on the ball and you just feel safe when they're in possession because they're not going to hurt you, the more players you sign that make you feel threatened. You know, the more it just affects everything, the more threatened you are on a pitch. So I'd probably rank Lamptey the highest. But obviously the thing with that, I obviously have to flag that he's suffering from injuries at the minute, quite an ongoing hamstring injury. And to be honest, it reminds me a little bit of Michael Owen. You know, the absolute burst of pace and the hamstrings Michael Owen had to suffer eventually. And it just took pace away from him. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen with Lamptey. But I think in terms of potential, Lamptey's probably top for me. And I think I'd have Dubois in second, you know, and then Max Aaron. But having said that, you know, the three decent players there, I think if Everton was a target, any of those three, you'd probably look at an upgrade.
Yeah, you're kind of happy with any of the three, really. Yeah, I think they're good names, and I'll let you go first on these midfield three and read them out. But yeah, I think every name he's put forward does give you a little bit of a headache.
In terms of the midfielders, I think I'd go Bissouma, Zakaria, Soumaré. I assume yours is different then.
No, it isn't. I'd Bissouma, I'd go first just because he's a player that we've both looked at a lot. I think we actually did a podcast on him alone, didn't we? About a month ago.
This seems like a bit of a boring shout as well, but another thing you have to throw in there, he's proven in England.
Yeah, I've got...
it does usually add a bit of tax, but at the same time, it is definitely a thing, you know, that translatable quality to a different league. And, you know, we've seen that happen with various players over the years. And one thing with Yves Bissouma is obviously he's established in the Premier League now.
Yeah, that literally same thing. And I remember there being quite a bit of negativity around that line in like the analytical scene, I should say. But it feels like a thing for me. You know that the player is already adjusted to the Premier League and the pace of it, and to still be performing so well when doing so is, you know, it's really appealing. Honestly, I'll be honest, it sounds like a bit of a cop-out. The other two, it could go either way for me. Maybe Zachariah more, just because I think I like Leverkusen. I think that with Gladbach, isn't it? Sorry, I think they're a good side. They've been well coached under Rose, who obviously is going to Dortmund. I'm gonna side with them just about.
I think on this one as well, you also have to kind of flag what you want from your centre mid. Like, obviously Bissouma is quite an all rounder, so it's a little bit redundant what you need in from his perspective. But I think in terms of Zachariah and Soumaré, I do think they offer slightly different perks. Like, I think from a basic perspective, I think Zachariah is better without the ball, and I think Soumaré is better on the ball. Bit more progressive and stuff from the last time I checked. So, you know, depends on what Ancelotti wants, I suppose. Depends on how he's looking to build this system and the kind of qualities that he needs in the middle of the park.
I suppose, you know, with that in mind, you consider you've got a midfielder who finally might be coming back in Gbamin, and you know what's his skill set, what is he going to bring to the side. Then you've got Alan in there, who's obviously a better player without the ball, so do you opt to go with the player who's a little bit tidier on it, you know? You're right, just things to consider.
Yeah, and then in terms of the final three, Dave, you can take this one first. We've got Leon Bailey, Moussa Diaby and Ismail Assar.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if this would be a surprise to you, but I'd probably go Bailey, Diaby, Sarr, because I do like Diaby. Between him and Bailey for me. I also like Sarr. It's a player that we looked at a lot, but he's gone down to the Championship this year, Sarr, and last time I looked, he was doing okay, but he wasn't. It didn't look to me like he was, you know, a star. It's not like, say, you've got thingy at Norwich. Oh, what's his name? Let me mind. Aren't we out here, Josh?
Cantwell or Brendier?
Brendier, yeah, thank you. Got Brendier, who's gone back down there and continues to perform at a really high level, standing out. And I'm not sure I've seen that from Sarr, so I'd still like to see a little bit more of him. I think he's still quite raw. I thought Bailey, you know, kind of burst onto the scene. He went off the pace a little bit for the year or so, Had some problems, but then he's looked really good again. So I'm probably leaning more towards Bailey, but it could be a coin toss between him and Diaby for me personally.
Yeah, difficult one this. I think I'd probably have Diaby top, and I don't really have much of a preference regarding Bailey and Sa. I understand what you're saying regarding Bailey having a bit of a dip. That was in my head, to be honest, because he did burst onto the scene as a 19-year-old, and he didn't kind of live up to that. Like, as a 19-year-old, he scored 9 goals in the Bundesliga, and since he's only just breached 6 for the first time, despite playing 3 seasons since, and that's 6 is this season. But in terms of Sa, I've always felt with Sa, he's just a really rough diamond. And the issue with him, although he's got a high ceiling, the issue with him is the amount of work I think he would need behind the scenes, the amount of help and training to get to a level that you want him to get to. Again, though, he's definitely a big threat, and he's the type of player who's difficult to defend against. Very fast, lots of stamina. Quite a cool finish as well in certain moments, but I think he's usually deployed as a bit of a traditional winger, isn't he, whereby he puts crosses in and stuff. Last time I checked on how he was doing in the Championship was around maybe Christmas time, and he was just doing okay. He was blending in with the rest of the league, which, as you say, isn't a great thing for a player who's supposed to have all this potential. But yeah, I haven't really got much of an opinion on those two in terms of who I prefer.
Yeah, just on the Bailey thing there quickly. Yeah, he scored 6 league goals, but if you throw in the Europa League and I think the domestic cup over there, it does go up to 12, so 12 goals and 6 assists, which is a little bit more like what you'd expect. And I think what I really like is, to be fair, I know Diaby does this as well. He can play on either side. I think Diaby predominantly plays out on the left, doesn't he? But I think, from what I've seen of Bailey this year, is he's kind of going from left to right, right to left, and also doing stints up front as well. And just in terms of Everton's profile, where they're kind of lacking, you actually touched on it before, they're lacking that kind of attacking force, that player who can just influence the attack and play in different ways. And Everton haven't really got a settled formation or identity. I think it's good to have maybe a versatile attacker. So that's maybe why I'm tipping it towards him.
Yeah. So I think this lad's got a second question, Dave. Am I right in saying that, yeah?
Yes, that's correct, mate. Yeah, correct.
So he says, going forward, what do you think Everton will benefit more from? Ancelotti continuing to adapt style/tactics game to game, or settling on a preferred style/system and buying players for that model? I'm torn because he's done a number on the likes of Klopp and Bielsa with his tactical experience, but changing so often makes it difficult to build partnerships on the pitch. Thoughts?
Yeah, fairly brief answer from me, to be honest. I think my preference is to have a settled system or style in place. Obviously, with the capacity to adapt when required, because I think that's important, to adapt to your opposition's strengths or to expose the weaknesses. Maybe if the game plan changes as well, you might fall behind. All these little things. But I just think it's really important that you do have this kind of settled structure. And when I think of the most successful sides over the last few years, we use Liverpool as the example, because we obviously look at them most away from Everton. You can kind of, in a nutshell, explain what their formation will be, behaviours on the ball and things, and I think it is important.
Yeah, no, I think I'm in agreement there. When it comes to this sort of stuff, I will always side with having some form of identity, and I think when it comes to what the lads mentioned there, for me it's not either or. For me it's both, but despite having both, the crux of everything that you do should still tie in with what you are as a team. And every decision that you... Because if you have that, every decision that you make on a pitch is kind of done in conjunction with what our identity is as a team. like, obviously, it, you know, you see certain teams across Europe's top five leagues and stuff, and everything that they do is stems from what their identity is, and they might be able to adapt game to game when it comes to, you know, say, for example, a formation or targeting a specific player or moving a player from his usual role to a different role. But whatever those changes are that happen, you know, match to match, the identity is still always in place. The principles of play never really change. And I think if there's one thing Everton have lacked, to be honest, over the years, it's that. And I think in the past few years, they've had a bit of a Man United problem in terms of when Man United got rid of Ferguson, or when Ferguson got rid of United. You know, they went to David Moyes, then they went to Van Gaal, then they went to Mourinho. Three completely different playing styles, without a director of football in place to kind of mould all them together. And Everton have obviously had Ronald Koeman, they've had Marco Silva, and now they've got Carlo Ancelotti, each of which has a different perspective on how the game should be played and stuff. And it just doesn't really work well over a long period of time. So I think Everton would benefit a lot from having that sort of thing in place.
Yeah, I think that answer was a really good segue to the next question we've got off Matt Doyle. It says, Everton have quite a low possession average this season. We know from the Martinez days that having lots of the ball doesn't equal success, but should we be pushing to dominate the ball more like the top sides do? Again, you know, not to keep it too brief, but I think possession definitely isn't the be-all and end-all. But I think everybody knows that now. You know, there's loads of sides who perform really well without focusing too much on possession. But, you know, as Guardiola famously said, I think if you have the ball, your opponent can't score. And if you look at the kind of top sides across the league, or, you know, just the big clubs, shall we say, all of them tend to have this philosophy that does incorporate dominating the ball and kind of pushing high up the field, dominating territory and things. And I personally, Josh, I think it's hard, isn't it, without having the best players to always implement it. But it does feel like it is a key staple to be the side who look after the ball more.
Yeah, difficult one to answer, to be honest, because, you know, as you say, it is kind of like, The optimal approach really in football is about dominance, and, you know, dominance usually involves territorial dominance of the ball, dominance of the shot count, and dominance of the ball isn't an absolute necessity, but, you know, as that comes into it, you are reliant on the quality of your players to be able to do that, and the more you kind of impose those instructions on players who essentially aren't good enough, the more mistakes tend to materialise and stuff. So it's not massively a problem if you're having a low possession average or whatever, but I do think that generally the better teams have more of the ball, and there's a reason why they do better in the league, because they've got more stuff under their control, the ball's further away from their goal, they face fewer shots, usually take more shots. And although Everton don't necessarily have the best players or whatever, I don't think Everton's squad and Everton as a club are that far from, say, a Spurs when Pochettino took charge. And Pochettino established dominance at Spurs. You know, they were dominating the game, really intense, lots of shots, ball, all the match taking place in the opponent's half. And I do think if Everton get the right foundations in place, the right players on board and stuff, I don't think it's out of the question. I don't think Everton are like a Palace or something like that. They were just going to get poached all the time and can't really afford to pay above 30 million for a player. I think Everton have got quite a high ceiling if they start adopting this sort of stuff.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, so Jack McGovern, he says, which has been the most effective for us this season? Two strikers or a lone striker with three attacking behind? Let you go first, mate.
Yeah, that was a really tough question, by the way, and I do know Jack, so I'm not happy with him with that one, because I think it's just quite hard to quantify, isn't it? You know, Everton actually haven't played a ton with three attacking behind. I I get the impression he maybe means a 4-2-3-1 there, but predominantly Everton have kind of, I think they've fluctuated between like a, oh well, I should really bring it up here because I was having a nose this morning, I think. Let's have a quick gander. Yeah, so the Everton's, oh no, okay, yeah, it's fair points. I think what he means by the one is, you know, like a 4-3-3 with kind of the one striker through the middle and then a 4-2-3-1. I think, I hopefully I'm not putting words in his mouth there, but yeah, but between the two, it seems like if you, I've noticed the XG and things like shots generated are much higher playing a 4-3-3 than a 4-2-3-1, which is interesting. Now, I'm not, you have to consider things like the quality of the opposition. You know, are Everton playing 4-3-3 against sides that they should be dominating and therefore feel a bit more comfortable? And that's obviously how they get the better numbers. That could be a factor. But yeah, I did notice that 4-3-3 versus 4-2-3-1, Everton's XG and shots were better than 4-3-3. But yeah, you know, on the two up top points, I think you've got two really good forwards in Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin to play that philosophy. So yeah, tough question. I don't know what you think, Josh. I don't know if you can maybe answer it a bit more clearer.
It's a difficult one to answer because I think, you know, Everton have struggled more than any other team. More than that, not any other team, more than most teams this season when it comes to having the same starting 11 every week. So I always think, I'm a firm believer that, you know, your tactical shape, whatever you're using, has to be a product of the qualities and the skills that you've got at your disposal on that day or whatever. So Everton using two strikers on a certain day could stem from, you know, a certain player like James Rodriguez in particular not being available. So yeah, it's a difficult one to answer. I think it whatever the most effective system will be will just depend on the players that you've got available. To be honest, for me, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, no, I can see the reason behind the question. It's not necessarily a bad question. It's just really difficult to answer that one. Toffees three, I should say. Do you agree with the trend of having a left-footed centre back? If yes, who would you add to our squad? It's kind of a two-part of that, Josh. So just firstly, on the first part of the question, do you agree with the trends of having a left-footed centre-back, if possible?
I can see why it's a thing, and I'm not against it by any means, but I don't think it's massive. I think it's just, if you can get two good centre-backs, one of whom is comfortable on the left, I don't really think it matters that much. Like, I'm thinking specifically, you know, apologies, you know, I am a Liverpool fan, but I'm thinking specifically, we have Virgil van Dijk as our left-sided centre-back. He's not left-footed. I think it's been quite a while. Well, it feels like quite a while since Liverpool have had a left-footed centre-back playing on the left of our centre-back pairing. And the reason it's not really an issue for us is because van Dijk offers lots of distribution picks outside of his preferred foot. You know, you think of those crossfield diagonal balls that allow Liverpool to escape a press and stuff, and the balls over the top that allow Liverpool to exploit space in behind and things. So I think rather than Everton looking for a specifically left-footed player, which is nice, you know, I think it should be factored in, but I just think general ability in distribution is going to help more than a player's preferred foot. Like, say, for example, if you've got a left-footed player there and a right-footed player, both centre-backs, but the right-footed player is just better on the ball. I don't think it then makes sense to target the left-footed player because he's left-footed. See what I mean? Mm. It's quite a bit of a simple answer, I suppose, but I just think you should prioritise quality over the preferred foot.
Yeah, no, it's fair, yeah, because you use Liverpool as an example. There's other high-profile examples as well. United, you know, Harry Maguire, he plays almost exclusively on the left. I think he did for Leicester as well, and he's right-footed. And although he seems to get a bit of stick, he clearly is a good defender. I think he just gets stick off the reputation of the transfer fee, doesn't he?
I think over at Arsenal as well, I think one thing Arteta did very, very early on when he took over at Arsenal was signing left-footed centre-back. Like, it was right near the top of the priority list. And he got in Pablo Mari. And he's done okay since, but by no means is he an established starter. I think he's on the bench more than he actually plays. Very weird signing for Arsenal to make at the time. And just feels like a bit of a waste of money, a bit of a waste of time, to be honest, because quality-wise, there's better players than him in the squad. So, despite him being left-footed, he doesn't play that often. And you've got maybe Gabriel in front of him. I'm not sure if Gabriel is left-footed anyway, to be honest, actually. But
yeah, he is, but your point still stands. You know, yeah, like, it's
I think what I'm getting
to,
at is, what I'm getting at is the quality comes first, basically.
Yeah. If not to put you on the spot, and I've got two off the top of my head, just because I put a piece together on them both this week for one of our publications. But anyone stand out left-footed centre-backs off the top of your head? As I said, I'm cheating a little bit because I wrote about a couple.
Yeah, I'll let you reel off a few. I'm going to have a quick check now just to double check that these players are left-footed.
Yeah. No, it's weirdly, it's not something that you only really... It's not something you look out for on the surface, is it? You only really find that information out once you start actually scouting the player. But, in terms of maybe wanting to add to the squad, you've got Sven Botman, who's obviously under-21 Netherlands international. I feel like we've talked about him before. Have we talked about him on other shows? I'm sure we have, Josh. But, he's playing for Lille, obviously doing really well. He's really big. I think he's about 6'4", strong in the air, decent in the floor, decent on the floor, I should say. You know, he's a left footer. You got Paul Torres as well at Villarreal. He's been recently linked with Manchester United. He's another who's a really big size. He's really good on the ball. I think that's actually why United are maybe targeting him, because you know they want to implement this possession game. But they're two names that, off the top of my head, I know are left-footed centre-backs who are probably going to get big moves in the summer.
Yeah, Botman was one of my shouts, wasn't he, when we looked for Liverpool centre-backs in November, I think.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, it was, yeah.
But yeah, it's difficult because obviously you've got left-footed players there, but it's whether they're actually ready to compete every week in the Premier League. Like, Zagadou comes to mind at Dortmund, but he's only 21. I think Southampton got in Salisu from, can't remember who exactly they got him from. I think it was in the French League. He's left-footed, but again, you could I watched him the other week, good player, clearly got a bit of speed about him for the centre-back and stuff. But made a few errors and kind of cost the game. David Carmo's an interesting shout, actually. I think he's another one, though, who's just suffered a bad injury. But he's playing in the Portuguese league for Braga, left-footed, 21 years old, and he's a big lad. About 6'5", actually.
Wow, I thought that was big.
Yeah. So he's an interesting little shout, like, considering like the team he plays for and what you could probably get him for and stuff. So, I think Everton needs to think like that, really. Don't they need to think outside the box a little bit?
Definitely. I believe it's you, Josh, with the next question. And there's actually a few off this person.
Right, so he says, what is the priority signing position and player? Just as blunt as that. So I'll let you go first, Dave.
Yeah, cheers, Adam. I think we've already alluded to it, haven't we? But I'd say right back and a forward are definitely Everton's priority this year. You know, you could maybe look at the midfield as well, but if you're just looking at two positions, I think a right back and some form of attacker / striker is crucial. And we've already touched on a few names, I think, haven't we already? At the top of the show, someone else who I wrote about from an Everton perspective this week, just because he's kind of, I don't know, he's getting a little bit of traction at PSV, is Danielle Malen. In fact, Josh, I'm pretty sure he's been linked with Liverpool recently. Don't know if there's anything in it, but another, you know, decent attacker who's putting up really big numbers in the Eredivisie, and you know, maybe could come to the Premier League and adapt and do well.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen that link actually. But he's a player I'm aware of, and what one issue with him, I think I'm aware of his agent. I think his agent's Raiola, isn't he?
Oh, is it? Yeah. Then again, Everton have got the worst relationship with Raiola. I'm pretty sure we've had one or two of his players in the past. Maybe like Lukaku might have been his agent or still is, and it felt like Everton were kind of schmoozing him at one point, and just seeing it as, you know, like, better the devil you know, and you'll still get good players who may only be with you for a couple of years, but will improve the team. I don't know if that's still happening, but yeah, it does feel like we've dealt with him in the past.
Yeah, I think with Everton, one issue, you know, that you mentioned there, I don't think they take enough shots. I think it's quite a basic thing, but they don't choose enough. I'm not sure where they rank in the table now for shots per match, but last time I checked, I think it was below 15th for shots per match. And you know that you need to up your shot count really if you're gonna get probability on your side a little bit more and become more likely to win games. Because if you're shooting below 10 times a game, and the team you're facing is shooting around 15 times or whatever, or you know above 10 or something, it just puts things a little bit more in doubt. And just looking very basic check using stats bombs numbers, shot creating actions per 90 this season. Just looking at players who are just shot volume merchants, basically, whether that be shooting themselves or creating for others and stuff, and just reeling off a few of the names. Christopher Nkunku's right up there. There's the lad at Lille, kind of based onto the scene this season, really. Yusuf Yazihi, Turkish lad. I think
good
Memphis
work with that name, Matt, mate.
Yeah, I think Memphis Depay is an interesting show, considering he's out of contract this summer, which no one seems to be talking about.
How old is Depay now? It feels like he's been around for it. He's still only 27, just turned.
Yeah, he was born the same year as me, yeah. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, just a player like that for Everton. Someone who's just got a bit of output about them. So I'm not sure if it has to be, well, I don't think it has to be, no, at all. I don't think it should be a striker, because they've got Calvert-Lewin there, who's quite established now. And obviously Richarlison can play there. So I think Everton just needs some sort of versatile forward who just naturally delivers goals and assists and shots and key passes and just all that sort of stuff. I think they were linked with what's his name? The Werder Bremen lad last year. Kosovan.
I don't remember that.
Or it might have been me linking these with them.
Oh, you were saying, Everton needs to sign him.
Yeah, I think we did like a bit of a transfer pod and I mentioned him as a name. I think he's fell off the radar a little bit this season. Can't remember his name. I'll get it up in a sec. But just a player like that who's going to just basically make a difference at the business end. A bit like James Rodriguez does, but younger, more versatile, more mobile, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. On Calvert-Lewin, by the way, you mentioned his name then. Adam's asked, how good is Dominic Calvert-Lewin versus Everton's other best PL strikers, namely Yakubu and Lukaku, and do we think it's a one-off or set to continue? Quite difficult probably to answer the stuff on Yakubu. It feels like he was obviously before the analytical boom, I guess, where you could kind of measure the same stuff. But I think just in terms of playing style, I think he offers so much more than Yakubu. I think Yakubu could hold the ball up, bit of a fox in the box, quite strong in possession. But I think if you Calvert-Lewin's game, the way he, you know, kind of makes runs really anywhere in the attacking third, you know, he'll come short, he'll run in behind, he'll run on the flanks. He's fantastic in the air. For me, Calvert-Lewin's arguably the best forward in the air at the moment. I don't mean just in terms of headed shots. I just mean pumping the ball along. Him leaping up with defenders and battling for all. I don't know if the numbers back me up, but you know, I think that's in terms of playing style, he offers so much more. In terms of whether it continue, one thing I will say is he's still only young, isn't he, Calvert-Lewin? But for the last couple of seasons, he has been performing in line with his XG. I don't think he's a fantastic finisher. You know, there's still this perception that he misses a lot of big chances, and it's probably true, to be honest, but he does pretty much perform in line with his XG. I think if I bring up the numbers now, so from 2018-19, I'm just going to use on the stats numbers, he had XG of 6.17, he scored 6 goals. 2019-20, XG of 16.11, and he scored 13 goals. So a little bit of an underperformance of 3 goals there. And then this season, XG of 15, and he scored 14 exclusively. This is the Premier League goals only. So he's underperformed by 1. I think overall, Josh, he's netted 22 goals this season for club and country, all competitions. So I'm inclined to think, and maybe you completely disagree and do say so, but I'm inclined to think he is going to keep continuing to deliver goals somewhere in between, in and around whatever his XG is at the time.
Yeah, I think he's very valuable player. You know, homegrown, English. Obviously, still quite young. I think he's around 23, 24. I think each season now moving forward, I think he's just going to be one of those strikers who bags between 15 to 20 goals each season. I don't think he's got a ceiling as high as Lukaku. I'll be honest, I think Lukaku's a little bit on a different level. But I do think Calvert-Lewin is clearly a very, very valuable and very useful striker. One thing I've picked up on, though, with him, although he's got quite a lot of strength to his game and he can come short and stuff like that, his actual use of the ball, it's not that elaborate, is it? It's very basic actions, very basic efficient actions. The way, like, you'll see maybe Harry Kane get on the ball and he'll switch the play 50 yards or he'll feeds on in behind with a through pass. Calvert-Lewin, in terms of his actual passing and stuff, it is really, really basic. He's quite a traditional striker in that mould, I think.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just quickly, because I'm conscious that we might run out of time and we probably need to get through the rest of these questions, but Josh, do you think one thing I feel like nobody's really talking about with Calvert-Lewin, and you probably put Richarlison in this as well, nobody's really talking about the fact that they're going to be huge targets, I think, in the summer for some big sides. You know, we're recording today and it was breaking this morning that Haaland might be going to Barcelona. So say one of the big Premier League sides don't get Haaland in the summer. I think somewhere on the shortlist, you'll have Calvert-Lewin maybe one or two names down on the list. And I honestly think people are sleeping on the fact that Everton could lose him in the summer. I hope not, obviously, but I think there's a lot of hype around him now. So he's not just scoring and performing well. There's also a lot of hype around him. And I think when that happens, it's really hard to kind of keep the other bigger names at bay. I don't know if you agree or...
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it much myself, really. I think... Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like the only real threat is Manchester United, I think.
Yeah,
if Manchester United don't come and get him, although Chelsea, in a way, well, you think they need a striker anyway, I don't see Chelsea making a move for him. I just don't. I don't see City making a move for him at all. So I think it's only Manchester United, and I think they would only do it if they can't get Kane, they can't get Haaland, and you could argue maybe he'd be third on the list. You know, it's possible. But yeah, I haven't thought about that one too much.
I wonder if Tottenham would try the chances at getting Calvert-Lewin if they lost Kane. That'd be quite interesting. I'd like to think someone wouldn't make that move. Like, although Tottenham, even though they've had a bad season, I think, you know, they are a more appealing club, I guess, in some way. Well, I don't know, actually. That's a tough one. I'm trying to look at this objectively, and maybe I'm looking at it too far the other way in saying that they're more of an appealing proposition.
I can't see Spurs paying what it will take, even if they get Harry Kane money, you know, if he's sold or whatever. I still can't see Daniel Levy parting with whatever it will take to get Calvert-Lewin out of Everton. Because surely, I mean, how long's his contract? Because
he'll be tied in for a while.
Yeah, I can't see him going for, like, less than an absolutely stupid figure. And although you'll have that money from the Kane sale, you know, if this is all hypothetical, Daniel Levy is still the type to think, despite us having the money now, I am still getting ripped off there, so I'm not doing it. So I think it's only Man United really is the problem there.
Yeah. One to watch. I think you've got the next question, Josh, and we'll probably have to be a little bit short with these next questions. Sorry, everyone, but you don't want to run over. So go ahead, Josh.
Okay, so the stats numbers show that we've largely performed mediocre across most metrics and over-projected positions in the league. Is this down to luck, a better calibre of player in the moment? Is it tactics? I think we've kind of addressed this on a lot of episodes lately. It's difficult to, it's difficult to define as one thing. It's hard. It's probably an accumulation of things. Like, I do think a bit of it stems from my thoughts on it last week was that a bit of it stems from Ancelotti's tactics, and that he doesn't really risk much. He doesn't expose any of his players, you know, whereby the defender on the halfway line with 50 yards behind him and stuff or anything like that. Obviously, they profit from set pieces. There has definitely been a bit of luck in there, but that can happen. I'm not really sure. Obviously, efficient finishing as well. Calvert-Lewin's found on net. It's a weird one. It is a weird one. All the numbers do say it's unsustainable and that Everton are a bit worse than their actual results suggest. But there's loads of influence and factors on this one. It could be a case of Everton changing when they get a lead and things, and you know, who knows, Dave?
Yeah, that's it. It is really tough to ask. There's things like, you know, the early goals and then sitting back and trying to defend that obviously impacts underlying numbers. But you know, if you're on social media, Twitter, and you like the kind of analysis and you look out for different things that people put out. I think it's quite telling that Everton are almost exclusively always kind of mid-ranking in every single metric out there, and a few that are ranking like kind of bottom half. So, yeah, it's a very strange one, but hopefully, you know, it is something deeper than what the numbers are telling us. Do you think the style of Cancelotti... let me start again. Do you think the style of football from... Carlo Ancelotti, that could be a good little nickname, Cancelotti. Do you think the style of football
sounds like a type of pasta or something?
Maybe start saving it at Goodison if he wins the FA Cup or something next year. Do you think the style of football from Ancelotti will develop as the project continues and Everton bring in better players? Another question that's really hard to answer, because if you have a look at Ancelotti's managerial history, He hasn't really done longer than 2 years anywhere since leaving Milan. You know, Chelsea 2 years, Paris Saint-Germain 2 years, Real Madrid 2 years, Bayern Munich a year, Napoli two. So we haven't really seen him kind of evolve since his AC Milan days. And I don't know about you, Josh, but whilst we were obviously football fans then, I certainly wasn't watching the game as we do now. So... yeah, if I'm being honest, I'm a little bit unsure. I think it will adapt because books I've read on them and stuff, it seems like they had a few evolutions there. But I guess I'm hopeful that it'll improve, because it's not always the best at the moment, is it? Even if it is effective.
No, I don't think he has a style, to be honest. I think he will always adapt according to the players he's got at his disposal. And if I think he looks at it as, you know, if Everton have all their players at their disposal on one day, nobody's injured, and they're facing, you know, Burnley at Goodison Park, I think he will just play in a more attacking manner, maybe. And I think the following week, if he's got five injuries and you're facing Manchester United, maybe, I think he will change completely again because the match scenario is different. And I think he's just one of them, whether you're in favour of it or not. I think you always need that to an extent, but I do think in the modern day you also need that identity to go with it, as we said earlier. So I'm not sure the style of play will absolutely dramatically improve, whereby Everton are doing all kinds every week. But at the same time, he's got, you know, he had a pass with Chelsea, didn't he, whereby they were really, really entertaining and stuff. So yeah, he's a weird manager to pin down to one specific box.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So, I like this question. This says, biggest transfer regret under Mashiri. Is it buying Bolasie? Is it not buying Zaha? Is it selling Vlasic? Is it buying Iwobi last minute? Missing out on other players? Thoughts on this one, Dave?
Yeah, really tough question, because I think this could be a podcast in itself, to be honest. you know, maybe in the summer, if we're a bit low on ideas, we'll do this in more detail.
Just off the top of your head, Dave, what year did he take over?
It was around, I think, maybe 2015.
Okay.
But it was kind of, it's been split into two parts, like pre-brands and post-brands, if you get me. So pre-brands, it was just kind of mayhem where you had like Steve Walsh there and, you know, just blowing money on kind of average names. And then it's tightened up a little bit since Marcel Brands come in. And that was about 3 years ago now. Bolasie never looked like an amazing signer, but you've got to remember he probably could have contributed stuff if he didn't suffer like a, you know, I think he had an ACL injury, put him out for like a year, and he just never come back the same. Zaha, I didn't think Zaha was a great move at the time, but if you could have got him at a better fee, I think he would have definitely contributed to this attack and would have been something Everton needed. Vlasic looks like he's going to be a really good player. I think Vlasic will come back to Premier League. I'd like it to be Everton, but I don't know if it will be. Josh, come on, take over.
I'm just laughing because some of the deals are unbelievable, you know. Some of the deals Everton have done over the years, I don't know what the thinking has been. It's absolutely shocking, some of it. Like the year where Everton bought three number 10s was mental. Absolutely so weird. Everton paid 50 million in total for two what I would label as bang average English talents, really, when it comes to Michael Keane and Jordan Pickford. I know Keane's contributed this season, I know he's improving and stuff. He hasn't really been a bad signing. But to just blow 50 million on those two players when they're both just absolutely okay and very little more, it's just mad, isn't it? 45 million on Gylfi Sigurdsson. It's so bad. But I do think that probably the worst it's difficult, you know. I do think Bolasie's shocking, though. That was a terrible signing. That, I mean, well, 26 million for a player who has done nothing throughout his career and arrives at Everton as a 27-year-old from Crystal Palace and since has barely played. It's absolutely awful deal.
Yeah, it wasn't a great deal at the time, and it's actually gone on to be worse than expectations, which takes some doing, really. We'll quickly move on. Stephen Kembry asked, could you name the two positions we need to address urgently? I think we did touch on that a little bit earlier, didn't we, with the right back and forwards. I think they're the two most important. I don't know if anything different stands out to you, Josh. Or
no, I'd agree there, mate, yeah.
Yeah,
I just think you need those two positions to be sorted. Yeah,
yeah. And there's we've been asked, do we know much on by Stephen? Do we know much on how much Everton are going to be allowed to spend and whether FFP restrictions are relaxed or not? I mean, we don't really, do we?
We don't know about what they'll be allowed to spend and things, but I do think it's an interesting question from a Mashiri perspective, because he obviously seems like the type of owner who isn't really forced by the whole net spend thing, doesn't really appear to want much of a return on his investment. And obviously in past seasons, he's kind of been a little bit hindered by his spending in terms of wanting to bring players to the club, but not being able to sell the same amount going the other way. So if these FFP things have been lifted a little bit and it's kind of been abolished with almost, he's kind of free to spend a bit more than he has been able to in the past, I suppose. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because I think, as we've just established before, he is inclined to spend a bit willy-nilly almost. But at the same time, it'll be interesting to see if any approaches in the Premier League or beyond change as a result of no club having to abide by a financial restriction.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think it'd probably be good news for Everton. But yeah, as long as mistakes from the past have been learned and we don't know if they actually have. But hopefully, you know, it would be nice to not be hands tied a little bit. And the final question, Josh, over to you.
I'm not sure if I even got it. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
From William, why are things such as taking the most shots so important? Surely it's just about who is the most clinical. Right. So in terms of taking the most shots, obviously it will always come back to who puts the shot away. But if you think of what a goal is, you know, a goal is just a shot that finds the net. So the more shots you take, you know, from a probability perspective, you're just getting the coin flip, if you like, the probability more on your side if you're taking more shots than the opponents. Obviously within reason. You know, you can't just start shooting from the halfway line and expect that to start benefiting you. But I've used the basic example of if I was to start playing a game of shooties against Dave and I was to take 20 shots and Dave was to take 10, you know, I would probably win most. And although some of it will come down to me being clinical, it's also just, well, I've got more of a chance of scoring almost because I'm shooting more often. That's kind of the crux of it, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, summarised perfectly, really. Can't have much more to that. It's, yeah, you know, if you kind of watch goals, sometimes they can just be a bit from nothing, or, you know, it can kind of have the fortune of going through defenders' legs and stuff. And I think if you're restricting your window of opportunity in terms of like one or two shots leading to a goal compared to 10 of those, you know, if you're taking like four shots in the box and you're taking six from outside the box, you know, those six from outside the box may obviously just share off the defender, go well wide or whatever, but you might have that one that, you know, ends up flying to the top corner. It's just the quantity tends to convert into more goals. It's as simple as that, really. So I feel like this thing of, well, you know, you're clinical. I don't feel like being clinical is sustainable. And me personally, and actually, I know you'll agree, Josh, you can be good, like, finishers, and you can't be known as a clinical player, but even the most clinical strikers go through hot and cold spells. So you don't really want to be relying on always running hot, because sometimes you will run cold, and in those moments you want to be able to fall back on a high quantity of shots to, you know, hopefully get you the goals you need. I guess that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, Harry Kane comes to mind. You know, I think he's joint top scorer in the Premier League at the minute, and Shaq, he's also the player who I think is top of shots per 90 as well. So he shoots the most often and he's scoring most. And obviously some of that comes down to being clinical, but he's also giving himself the chance to score by just shooting all the time.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I think that's everything. As I said, sorry to anyone who put in a question that we haven't got through. As I said, I just had a quick look at them. If there was any that I thought maybe wasn't most applicable to us two to go through, then I just put it to one side. But I really appreciate you reaching out and sending messages. We both do. The thing is, I think we're actually now not going to be able to record a podcast for a month or so. We've got some staff holidays and things coming up, so we'll have to put it on the back burner. But as always, you know, thanks for listening. And hopefully, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks' time, we can bring out some new episodes, and Everton have kind of given us plenty to discuss and hopefully some good results as well. So, Josh, thank you as always for your time.
Yeah, no worries, mate.
And thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.